Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. In his book, Three Revolutions, Steering Automated, Shared, and Electric Vehicles to a Better Future, Dan Sperling says that transportation is on the cusp of revolutionary change. He argues that we have the potential to create a dream transportation system, one that reduces traffic congestion and greenhouse gas emissions, increases accessibility and affordability, and creates healthier, more livable cities. But this scenario is not guaranteed. How we guide these transportation revolutions will determine if they change our lives and communities for the better or for the worse. Daniel Sperling is Distinguished Blue Planet Prize Professor of Civil Engineering and Environmental Science and Policy and Founding Director Emeritus of the Institute of Transportation Studies at University of California, Davis. And he joins us today. Professor Sperling, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to join you.
Well, fascinating. This is something that touches us all, right? Our cars, transportation. You begin the book saying we love our cars. That's certainly true, and I guess could be an impediment to this future that we're going to talk about today. Maybe you could outline that for us. In the book, you say most of us, one person in the car, unused 95% of the time. Right. And that amounts to about 17% of household income. So right now, a very inefficient system.
Yes, it is very inefficient in that sense, but the cars have been a miraculous benefit to this country, to the world. It's given us so much more mobility, freedom, flexibility. And it's, of course, its counterpart trucks have led to economic growth. So there's lots and lots of good things, but I think we've become too dependent. We've gone too far in our dependence. And it's in a sense that there's lots of other options, and we've let those other options atrophy away over time.
I was surprised. You have in the book, buses and trail transit account for around 1% of passenger miles in the U.S. This is after years of at least some people really trying to emphasize that. And get us onto buses and transit.
And 40% of that is in New York.
So it is. Yes. Amazing. So that hasn't worked as well as some people would have liked. But you do say that there is disruption happening in transportation around those three areas. And you talk about, we'll get into this, shared, electric, and automated. It's interesting, you go to the year 2040. And you have the dream and the nightmare. So I wonder if you could outline, each of those for us.
Well, okay, so let's look at it. So there's these three sets of revolutions that I talk about. And so, and they're all progressing in a very different way and a different rate. So we start with electrification, something people are very knowledgeable or know about. And we were on a trajectory of, many more electric vehicles. Electric vehicles have the benefit that they eliminate urban pollution from the vehicle, that they're actually, and therefore greenhouse gases for the most part, depending on where the electricity comes from. And actually people like them a lot. They're very quiet. And, I was actually in Beijing and China a few years, actually just last spring, and they've gone electrified so much in China, like over 50% of the cars sold are electric, 25% of the trucks, all of their motorcycles and scooters are electric. The city was so quiet. We talk about that kind of theoretically, but in practice, it was eye-opening to me how quiet the city really was, the cities there were. So those are all benefits, and of course I can't help but talk about China with electrification because that's where it's really taken off in the last few years. In fact, to the point where the electric vehicles sold in China now are cheaper, they cost less than the gasoline cars. But United States, some states were going very aggressively toward electric vehicles. California, Oregon, Washington, New York, 12 or 13 states had adopted regulations saying we'd get to 100% of sales being electric by 2035. But that's not happening now. The new Trump administration has disallowed, terminated the regulations in those states and reduced, the fuel economy and the greenhouse gas standards in Washington. So that's kind of in a steady state now. In the United States, they're about 9% of sales, and it's the most likely scenario to stay that way for a few years. So that's where we are with electric. But the rest of the world is moving very fast. In Europe, they're up to about 28% of sales are electric, and some country, Norway, it's 95%. Some other countries, it's pretty high. So that's the electrification story in a nutshell. If we go to the automation revolution, so when I wrote the book in the late 2010s, there was really, everyone was enthusiastic about it. There was huge amounts of money being put into it, but it turned out that it was overhyped, and so interest fell off. But a number of companies kept up with it, and so the reality is they were companies with deep pockets. It was one of the companies, Waymo, is Google. Another company, Zoox, is owned by Amazon. And so, they've got the money and they've been putting it into it. So it fell off a little bit, but now it's coming back in a pretty big way. Waymo is, I believe they've gone commercial in 10 cities now, and they're expanding pretty quickly. And it's really, I mean, it's an interesting phenomenon. Okay, so here's where I lay out the heaven and hell scenario. So, okay, so I'll say the hell scenario is that these vehicles are, all of them are sold as personal vehicles or used in a single passenger type service, kind of like what most of Uber and Lyft are today. And if that happens, we will see twice as much vehicle use on the roads. We've done a lot of research, a lot of studies. We did an interesting study once where we gave people a chauffeur and said, okay, this chauffeur is available anytime, any place, you can go anywhere. And people ended up driving almost twice as, or traveling almost twice as much. And I think that's very likely because if you think about it, you're in the car. You're not driving, so you can sleep, you can read, you can watch a movie, you can do anything you want, you can work. And so people will be very comfortable commuting 2 or 3 hours. They'll send the vehicle to go pick up their kids and take them somewhere, but then come back empty. So there's going to be a lot of empty miles and just a lot of vehicle use. And so that's, I probably overstated it saying it's a hell scenario because in many ways it's a great scenario for a lot of people, right? But then the hopeful part of that, and this is kind of a long shot, this is the third revolution, and that is the sharing and pooling revolution. So that really picked up. So I have to say, all of this is really changes since about 2010. All of these new technologies and new innovations really started happening then. Up until 2010, we saw almost no innovation in the transportation sector. Buses were the way they'd always been. Cars were still four wheels, gasoline engine, traveling 60, 70 miles per hour on the roads, less in the cities. There'd really been no system innovation in many decades, in many ways since we had the interstate highway system back in the 50s and 60s. So 2010 was a hugely important pivotal time. And that's when Uber and Lyft got started. That's when Tesla released its first its Roadster electric car, and 2 years later, its Model S. And that's also when Google started experimenting, seriously with automated vehicles. So anyway, so the third revolution is the disappointing one for me. It's not happening yet. And that is using those automated vehicles to actually be, in a sense, public transportation, where if you had multiple, so this the idea is you have like even an Uber car. So we have Uber pool service in some cities where they stop, pick up one passenger, go to another, and the algorithms, optimize it all to reduce the amount of delay time for people in the car. But it has the Uber pool, actually during the pandemic, Uber pool shut it down, Lyft shut down their service, because people didn't want to be in the same, strangers didn't want to be in the same car. And they've only, Uber slowly brought it back. Lyft has not brought it back. And the automated cars so far are the Google ones, the Waymo ones are single passengers. But there is another company, Zoox, owned by Amazon, that is intended to be a pooled shared service where it'll take in like five people at it, seats for five people. But even taking it better would be small vans or even minibuses that provide this service. And then if you have that, then you reduce the cost per passenger to a really low level, much less than what bus transit and rail transit costs now per passenger. And therefore you provide true equity, it's much more equitable, it serves many more people. And there are, the truth is, there's many people marginalized by our car dependence. I estimate it's about 20% people that are physically limited and they can't drive, people that are, economically limited. And then you have cars with multiple drivers in the same household and they don't have enough money for more cars. So this is kind of, I mean, that's where my beautiful future scenario comes out, is where you have, these pooled automated vehicles that are electric.
And you say that it's going to take all three to really, reach your dream scenario. I just want to mention one scenario that really resonated with me. I could see this happening: people owning automated vehicles, but you can't afford the parking, so you just set them to drive all day until you can use them again. That would greatly congest the roads. I could see people doing that.
Yep. Actually, an interesting is Tesla has, they are getting into the automated vehicle game. By the way, I call it automated, not autonomous vehicle, because they are not autonomous. It's an abomination of the English language to call autonomous. But that's where the media has gone, and that's what is used. So these automated cars, so Tesla is talking about you could have your vehicle, you privately own it, but then you loan it out. Not loan it out, you rent it out to others, kind of peer-to-peer, what's now in the technically referred to as peer-to-peer car sharing. And that way you generate, so it's better than the scenario you just laid out, Tom. So in this way, it is actually used. It's not just driving around. But it's still high cost and it still results in generating a lot more travel on the roads.
Yeah, very interesting. Let's take a brief break. Come back and talk much more about this. The future of transportation. We're talking about automated, shared, and electric vehicles, and we're basing this conversation on Dan Sperling's book, Three Revolutions. We have with us Daniel Sperling. He's Distinguished Blue Planet Prize Professor of Civil Engineering and Environmental Science and Policy and Founding Director Emeritus of the Institute of Transportation Studies at the University of California, Davis. More following this brief break.
This is Science by the Slice. Large birds of South America, including brightly colored toucans, face serious survival challenges. Deforestation from expanding agriculture and mining is shrinking habitats. Hunting and collisions with human-built structures also affect bird populations. USU ecologist Noel Beckman and her students are exploring whether interaction rewiring, that is, changes in interactions with new or different existing species, can counter negative effects from the loss of big birds. With their large beaks and bodies, big birds aid dispersal of the seeds from fruits they eat. Beckman says replacement species could mitigate, but not eliminate, the ecological effects of loss of big birds.
This segment of Science by the Slice is brought to you by the USU College of Arts and Sciences, offering degree programs in the sciences and mathematics. Details at artsci.usu.edu.
Thanks for joining us for Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about the future of transportation. And Dan Sperling outlined that in his book, Three Revolutions, Steering Automated, Shared, and Electric Vehicles to a Better Future. We're getting an update on that today with Dan Sperling, who's founding director emeritus of the Institute of Transportation Studies at University of California, Davis. I'd like to take each one of these separately. I'd like to start with vehicle automation. It seems a little bit, and I think a lot of people, a bit of still sci-fi element to it. A lot of us haven't encountered or ridden in a automated vehicle. I guess that's probably changing as these come out a little bit more. And you say that there's a difference between self-driving cars and driverless. You also say that the elements of automation are already appearing in our vehicles. What do you tell us how, kind of where we are right now just with our regular vehicles in terms of automation?
Yeah, most vehicles already have some, most new vehicles have some amount of automation. So, you know, there's, of course, what we call adaptive cruise control, and that means you set the speed, but then it changes the speed depending on how to maintain a safe distance behind the car in front of you. So it speeds up, slows down. And so that's the accelerating and braking part of it. And then there's the steering part. So a lot of cars, they'll stay in the lane. And this is basic technology now. And if you start going out of the lane, it'll beep at you, or the steering wheel will shake to tell you, you know, that you're going out of it. But now we're taking it much further. So there's cars that have it, you know, we refer to it as advanced driver assistance is the technical term, ADAS. And certainly some vehicles like the Tesla have had it for many years. I've had a Tesla, and what it does, there's two versions of it, the autopilot and then the full self-driving. So Tesla gets in a lot of trouble because they've been overselling it, saying it is fully automatic and you don't have to pay attention. And there's been lawsuits and about that. But I have to say for myself, I love it. You know, I'm not, cars are fine, but they're a functional thing for me. I get on the road, I turn on that autopilot, and it drives itself on the freeway. I pay attention. You know, that's the problem. The technology that exists today and for the commercial, you know, normal vehicles that you buy from General Motors has this technology in its new vehicles. BMW, Tesla, and quite a number of them have it now. But you can't just ignore it. You have to pay attention because it's not perfect. In those vehicles, it's not perfect. And, you know, they do little odd things once in a while. And, you know, yesterday I was driving and there was a bright sun coming right at me and the cameras got a little confused and the car got a little wobbly. But the more advanced version that Waymo, the Google company, and Zoox and a number of others have, and it's going in trucks too, by the way, for long haul trucks. And as well as small shuttle buses that go on certain routes in some cities, you know, that's becoming pretty widely available. But it is an experience. You get into these. So I've been in one of these fully automated vehicles a few times now. It's a little eerie because, as human beings, we don't have control, and it's kind of an eerie, unnerving experience at first. The steering wheel is moving. It's like a ghost is driving your car. But you know what? It works like perfectly. And yes, there are these extreme cases that have come up where it doesn't do exactly what it should do. But, all the evidence is that it's at least as safe and probably considerably safer than the average driver. They don't sleep, they don't fall asleep, they don't drink, they stay alert. So these vehicles, I mean, that's what they do. They're fully automated in terms of steering, braking, and maintaining speed at any speed you want. And this technology is in many cars already, and they're just, there's a lot of questioning, health. So the regulatory world, the government world, is looking at it and saying, okay, how safe is safe enough? And the problem is, there is no easy metric to use to determine what is safe enough. But the evidence is mounting because there has not been a serious fatality or a serious accident even on any of those automated cars since, I think, 2018. There was one problem then. But in all the new ones, in all the Waymos and Zoox, you don't, there's been no, you see articles. So the media loves, this is a great topic for the media. So there's one controversy where some of the cars have not been coming to a full stop behind a school bus when it stops. And so, so there's lots of these little incidents happening because the reality is humans are incredible in terms of our cognitive abilities. We see everything. We can look in a person's eye, the driver, and have a sense of what they're about to do. But that's where we are. So I think it's a done deal. Okay, just like electrification, automation's a done deal. There's a question of how fast and exactly how, but it's going to happen. In trucking, it's going to happen because we don't have enough drivers and it saves a lot of money. In cars, it's going to happen because, it's so much more convenient, so much easier, and ideally, from my point of view, become a mobility service, a public transportation mobility service, that will be good for society, save money. It'll save all of us money. It'll be much cheaper than, owning and operating a car. Remember, Tom, you said at the very beginning, these cars, our personal cars, are just sit there 95 to 96% of the time. And now you have vehicles, they'll just keep driving all the time and they'll be moving around, they'll be picking up people. So the cost of the car, which has become very high, is now spread out. It's amortized over many people, many rides. So the cost per ride is going to be much less than Uber and even much less than what we as individuals are paying for our using, owning and operating our cars.
Well, actually, one barrier to it, just regular people gravitating toward a fully automated vehicle would be that loss of control. We like to be in control, right? And also trusting the technology. Great, did work, near 100% of the time, but what if there's a glitch, right? The stakes are pretty high if you're out on the highway to, 80 miles an hour. But I guess the evidence coming in the recent years is that these are safe. The automated vehicles.
They're, as I say, there's hard to make an exact evaluation because all the cars are operating in different ways in different circumstances. But the evidence is really growing that these vehicles are safer, that definitely safer than your average driver. So, of course, all of us believe we're better than the average driver. So there is that phenomenon as well. But we don't drink, we don't fall asleep, we don't get distracted. We're good drivers. But the reality, but then there's others. There's the drunk drivers, that run through a red light, crash into, other people. So it is a matter of psychologically getting ready, used to it. But all the surveys that are done, so you survey people that have never been in one, and they articulate all the things you talked about, Tom. They're apprehensive, they're out of not controlling it. But after they've been in it, the acceptance rate goes way up. People become much more comfortable with it. And that was true for me as well. It's like, okay, I get it. It really can do a unprotected, what we call unprotected left turn, like taking a turn at an intersection where cars are coming from the other direction. That's kind of one of the tough challenges for automated vehicles. But you see it actually works. And okay, there's some unusual circumstance that I'll run into. There'll be a police, pulling over some cars on the side, and it's a little uncertain if you're supposed to stop or not. There's construction zones, but they're training these vehicles, every time they run into another unique circumstance, they get smarter.
Yeah, I'm thinking what, I don't know if this ever happened. A policeman pulls over a fully automated car.
Yeah.
What happens then, right? You have to talk to Google. Yeah.
I know that actually has happened.
Oh, it has. Yeah. Yeah.
The police, they look in there, there's no one there. They go, okay, it's locked. What do I do now?
Yeah. Brave New World. I will say a fully automated vehicle undoubtedly could parallel park better than me. Of course, that's a low bar, but what? So I can imagine for myself. Okay, maybe I get used to get in a not fully automated vehicle. I might still worry about that semi truck that's it's automated barreling down the road. I guess it's you'd have to trust in the overall system if we go fully automated.
Yeah, I confess I'm also a little apprehensive about having those big, tractor trailers, semis going down the road. The way they're doing it is there's they started in Texas and I think some other area. So they're just taking them and just running them on the, interstate from one location to another, and then a driver takes over. So they're just on it. And you keep it, I guess you would keep it in the inner lane, and so it just goes along there at 60 miles per hour or whatever, and I guess that'll reduce some of our apprehension, right?
Yeah. If you just joined us, we're talking with Dan Sperling. He's a transportation expert. He's founding director emeritus of the Institute of Transportation Studies at University of California, Davis. We're talking about his book, Three Revolutions: Steering Automated, Shared, and Electric Vehicles to a Better Future. I want to move to electric vehicles. We're more familiar with these, right? Many people at least have a hybrid, and many have an electric vehicle. I guess the technology is constantly improving. Batteries is a key, right? And I guess early on, distance. We're afraid of getting stranded somewhere, but tell me where we are now with the batteries and range of these vehicles.
Yeah, so I will say for personal reasons and professional reasons, I've owned one electric vehicle since I think 2013. Had a Nissan Leaf, had a hydrogen electric vehicle, a Toyota Mirai, and a Tesla, and driven many others too. So, one thing, start with cost. So they have been more expensive, but that's been more of a result of its limited production, and haven't really scaled up. Batteries have been expensive, but battery costs are coming way down. And the cost, as the production scales up, the cost per vehicle goes down. As I said earlier, in China, it's already, because they've really gone into mass production, the electric cars cost less. So people's apprehension, as you mentioned a moment ago, is this, this concern about charging and finding a place to charge. So it turns out that, many people own their own homes and can charge it at home. And so, in fact, something like of the vehicles already in the US now, something like 85% of them are owned by people that have a place where they can charge at home. And if you charge at home, actually that's, in many cases much better than a gasoline car, because you don't have to go to a gasoline station and you just charge up at home. And it's only when you're making a really long trip that it becomes an issue. These cars now get about 200, they're getting about 300 miles of range. And most people don't drive, more than 40 or 50 miles a day. So, but the number of charging stations is being built out. Tesla was the leader. And I have to say, when I travel with a Tesla, almost anywhere, certainly in California, but in much of the US, there's charging stations everywhere. In fact, some of the charging stations, these are so common and popular now in some places, there's 100 chargers in a station. I mean, these are massive. And you go there and it doesn't take that long to charge. If you're driving 300 miles, you should be stopping, right, to take a rest, And so when I do it, I stop, go have something to eat, go to the bathroom, and back on my way. So, you can look at it that it's a problem or a negative. But you can also look at it as, you can charge at home, it's easier. Now, if you live in an apartment or condo, it's a little more challenging because you do have to do public charging. Ideally, apartment buildings and condo buildings will put in charging in their buildings, and you can charge just like someone that owns their own home. And I think that is what will happen. That is happening. And that public charging will only be if you're going long distance somewhere.
Want to ask about the environment. Of course, electric vehicles don't have emissions, but aren't those emissions just kind of shifted? Electricity has to be produced somewhere to then end up in your vehicle.
Well, there's another revolution going on outside of transportation, and that is the use of renewable energy. And nuclear for electricity. So the amount of coal in the US, the amount of coal used to account for over 50% of all the electricity generated. Now I believe it's around 20% and dropping. And coal is the worst in terms of pollution. And so a lot of the rest is natural gas and now solar and wind. And so as so that revolution toward renewable energy on the electricity side means that you don't have emissions from the vehicle nor from the electricity system. And frankly, that is where we're going. Solar has become so cheap and wind is getting pretty cheap also that electric utilities are turning, even without any regulations or any policy, they're turning to renewables just because it's a cheaper way of providing electricity.
So right now, many of us are driving Japanese cars. It is the future. Are we going to be driving Chinese cars in the future?
So let me tell you just a really brief history of the Japanese cars. So I'm an old guy. I remember long ago, back in the 70s, when the US cars, they were these big things with fins. The average fuel consumption was 12 miles per gallon. They were polluting. And frankly, the quality was not very good. What we call a fit and finish. And the Japanese came in and they had small vehicles that were efficient, low emissions. And, there was this huge fear that the Japanese were going to take over the industry. Well, you fast forward, and so, 20 years or so, and what happened is the Japanese companies, they came to the US, In some cases, they formed some joint ventures with the US car companies. In other cases, they set up their own Kentucky, Ohio, Tennessee, places like that. And, now I haven't checked the latest, but they do account for, I don't know, I think they're around probably 40% of the market in the US. And now they're just accepted as normal. And the reality is the US car companies have been shrinking steadily over time. So they used to account for like about 85, 90% of all car sales. And now they're down to about 30, 35%. And so, you can think about it. So I think what's going to, okay, so here's what I think is going to happen. So the Chinese industry, EV industry, okay, so let me give you a little history. I think the history is going to flip here. So the Chinese said, okay, US, European, Japanese companies, you can come to China, but only in a joint venture with a local Chinese company. And that's what happened. And they had, I don't know what they got up to, like 60% market share in China. And then the Chinese thought they were going to learn from these other companies, learn how to make a good car and become competitive. And they never did. And so what they did is they said, okay, well, haven't really succeeded there. Let's do electric vehicles. And so the government supported it, and a lot of companies got started. And now the electric vehicles have taken over the market in China. So I think what's going to happen, the Chinese companies are going to come to the US, to Europe, to China, I mean, to Canada, and they'll form joint ventures at first. And they'll form joint ventures. And there's already talk. President Trump even said just a few weeks ago, he says, okay, if they come in here and they hire Americans and they spend money in the US, okay with me. I mean, he changes his mind, every other day, so I'm not sure that'll be the policy. But I think that is what's going to happen. And we'll see the Chinese come in that way because they have gone ahead of the rest of the world in terms of learning how to build low-cost, beautiful cars. I mean, very sophisticated, they're high-tech cars. The Chinese consumers have been kind of turned off to the Western car companies because they haven't incorporated a lot of the technology that the Chinese companies have, all the infotainment, all the screens, and all the services you get. Canada just made a deal to allow a small amount of Chinese EVs to come in to Canada, and Mexico is doing the same thing. So it's inevitable. The US is like the last bastion. Europe is doing the same thing, joint ventures. So it's they've come up with a superior product. I'll let out some of my biases here. It's like, the US has lots of products where we're far superior to the rest of the world. And that's how the world economy works, is they came up with a good product, so let's embrace it. It'll be good for us, in so many ways. Now we do need, we made a mistake with the Chinese back, 25 years ago, when the world economy was opened up. The world WTO, World Trade Organization, let China in, and we didn't put any limits on the Chinese products coming into the U.S. and it swamped it, and it did gut many of our manufacturing industries. And I think we made a mistake there. We should have protected it, done it in a more gradual way, let our domestic companies learn how to compete better in some of those products. And I think that's what's going to happen here, and that's what should happen here. Do it gently, do it gradually. Let GM and Ford and Chrysler and the other companies figure out how to do it better, learn from the Chinese, and then we're all better off.
I guess this is hard to predict, but I wonder when prices will come down to the point where many people will adopt this. I'll just use my neighborhood as an example. Electric vehicles pretty rare in my neighborhood. I think people maybe would want to, but I guess price is one barrier. When's this going to be adopted really widely, do you think?
Well, you know, so much, you know, you're getting into the basics of how markets develop and consumer psychology and so on. You know, part of what's happened here is that in many areas where the government was supporting electric vehicles in these 12 or 13 states, the acceptance went up very, very quickly. And in California, it's up to about, I think, 27% of sales are electric, and it's a normal thing. And of course, there's a lot of charging stations, but it's a normal thing. So there's a lot of consumer psychology that when it's kind of sometimes called the neighborhood effect. If you see your friends have one, it becomes more comfortable. And the same thing with automation, of course. But electric vehicles, you see it, your neighbor's there, your relatives, your brother or sister, kids have one, you talk to them, and it becomes more normal. Now, what's happened here is that, you know, the Trump administration has taken to be very hostile to electric vehicles. And I'm not quite sure why so hostile, because, I mean, okay, if you don't want them, you don't want them, but why be antagonistic to them? And so, but that messaging has gotten through. And consumers, even in places like California and some of the other blue states, you know, the market is falling off a little bit. They did reduce take away the incentive, federal incentives as well. But it's that messaging. I think consumers, especially with new products, and the companies themselves have backed off because, you know, the requirements have been reduced and they don't have to do it. So the question is really what happens, you know, with a new Congress, with a new administration. You know, the reality is electrification is inevitable. It's going to happen. You know, maybe it won't be 100%, but it's going to be 90%, 95% eventually. And it's really a question of exactly how that happens. And there'll be different rates in different places. It's a, you know, the car, electric vehicle is much easier to manufacture than a gasoline car. You look at that, your gasoline engine, look under the hood. I mean, that's the most complicated piece of technology you can imagine, right? And you've got wires and all kinds of things going on, you know, there. An electric vehicle, you don't have hardly any moving parts. It's much simpler. And the only impediment really is the cost of the battery. And there's all kinds of innovation going into, you know, new types of battery chemistry, new types of designs for batteries. So they're going to come down for sure. There's no doubt about that. There's so much innovation happening. So at the end of the, even today, Tom, if you look at electric car today, if you drive, say, 15,000 miles or more a day, a year, you know, the average is about 12,000. So if you drive about 15, 16, 17,000 a year, most electric vehicles will be cheaper than a gasoline car. And when you look at the total cost, because now the electricity is cheaper than a gasoline, you have much less maintenance with an electric car just because you don't have all those moving parts. So what we call the total cost of ownership, meaning putting together the purchase costs, fuel costs, maintenance costs, ends up being cheaper. Even today, even with the high cost of EVs, are cheaper for many people in many circumstances today.
We're talking with Dan Sperling. He's a transportation expert, talking about his book, Three Revolutions, Steering Automated, Shared, and Electric Vehicles to a Better Future. We'll take a brief break, come back with final segment on this topic following this.
Support for Utah legislative coverage here on UPR is made possible in part by our members and the USU Institute for Disability Research, Policy, and Practice, Utah's University Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. More information at idrpp.usu.edu.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we've got two brilliant bread bakers and teachers, the authors of the King Arthur Baking Company's Big Book of Bread. They'll spend the hour with us answering every question on baking you can think of. That's coming up on The Splendid Table.
Tune in Sunday at noon after Eating the Past here on UPR.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. My guest is Dan Sperling, who is Distinguished Blue Planet Prize Professor of Civil Engineering and Environmental Science and Policy and Founding Director Emeritus of the Institute of Transportation Studies at University of California, Davis. We're talking about his book, Three Revolutions, Steering Automated, Shared, and Electric Vehicles to a Better Future. Just have about 4 or 5 minutes here in this brief final segment. Dan Sperling, I want to have you just talk very briefly about shared, that third revolution, right? Shared vehicles. You say this is the one that's kind of stalled out a bit. What's it going to take to have more shared use of vehicles?
Well, you know, let me at first define the shared revolution. So it's not just vehicles, but it's bikes and scooters as well. Mm. So we've seen that, you know, many companies have gone into business where, you know, you rent a bike for the day or just a short trip, and then you just pay as you go kind of thing. So, you know, and that all came about, you know, really it came about because of the iPhone. 2007, iPhone came out and the apps that go along with it. Now you can do this demand responsive services because everyone has this little computer in their hand that they can use to call and reserve and use and pay for a service like these shared vehicles. So that, but the shared automated vehicles, you know, the pandemic really undermined it when people didn't want to be in the same vehicle, in the same space with other people because of the COVID. And it's taking a while to recover from that. And I am concerned because it's coming back really slowly, this whole idea of sharing. And I understand, I mean, maybe most humans really don't like to share, right? We try to teach our kids in kindergarten to share, but it never really sticks that well. And so it really becomes a question of, everyone has a price. So we get on an airplane and we get squeezed in like sardines, and we accept that because there's not a good alternative. In this case, we want to make it so attractive, and I think we're going to need a lot more innovation there. So like on airplanes now, if you go in business class or international, they build these walls between the seats so that people can feel privacy. And I think that's what's going to happen to get the mass market into it, is to create a sense of security that there's a camera in there, that if, you know, if there's some problem with another passenger, you know, there's someone monitoring it and you feel comfortable about that, that some people that want more privacy, a little more space. But in the end of the day, it's so far superior to, you know, from an economic perspective and from an equity perspective to what we have now, because now, you know, people are paying so much for transportation and it doesn't have to be. And that disadvantages a lot of people, you know, that, you know, we talk about affordability, you know, that's the national rage these days, the buzzword of the day. But if we're really concerned about affordability, this is a kind of strategy we would be following.
Hmm. Well, we reached the end of our hour. Much more we could say. You can pick up the book and you can check out the Institute of Transportation Studies, the University of California, Davis. We've been talking with Daniel Sperling. He's founding director emeritus of that Institute of Transportation Studies. He's also Distinguished Blue Planet Prize Professor of Civil Engineering and Environmental Science and Policy at UC Davis. Dan Sperling, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. Been a pleasure.
Thank you for the fascinating conversation, and thanks, everybody, for listening to Access Utah.